First, to Bruce Shapiro. And Bruce, do you wish to apologise at the beginning or would you leave it to the end?
Well, I'd have to figure out which Donald Trump I was going to apologize to. The Donald Trump who appeared on television last night as a kindly, compassionate, ever listening, faithful carer of the public weal, or the Donald Trump whose appearance on our news programs and front pages has made such a disastrous impact in recent months. Look, it was an interesting convention and an interesting night, interesting first night of the convention. First of all, interesting as spectacle in snake oil selling, and secondly, for the varying messages aimed at bits and pieces and fragments of Donald Trump's core constituency, which really was the only audience for this and for this event.
I'm going to get you to text me the address of the White House so I can post my vote after the program. Look, let's go back to Joe, if we might. I missed his speech. What sort of a job did he make of it?
Well, you know, it was an interesting Biden's convention, the whole convention culminating in his speech was, as I said last week, on the one hand, that, you know, a giant infomercial, the usual trappings of the convention being stripped away by coronavirus. But when Biden finally got up to speak, he had one job to do, which was to persuade anyone listening in the United States or around the world that he's a normal human being who cares, and that he will listen to science, that he handles grief and death well, and this is a country still reeling, awash in grief and death, and that he will sort of reestablish political norms. And it was, from that perspective, it was a forceful speech. You will not be able to remember a single idea in a Barack Obama way. It lacked the poetry of a Kennedy speech, but it was an authentic Biden speech. And I think that that feeling of authenticity is what he is riding on, what he is betting on going into these final 70-plus days before the election. You know, it was effective, sort of coming out of the basement as the political leader who will listen to Americans and reestablish norm. So we heard a lot from Republicans at his convention. We heard from national security figures. The idea was to project a sense of him as a consensus candidate rather than a divisive candidate. And I think he succeeded in that.
You know, you often don't appreciate what you had until you lose it. And that's why I'm feeling this wave of appreciation for the Donald, because there's a possibility, I hope a distant one, a remote one, that he could lose. What's the betting at the moment?
Well, you know, Biden's lead in the polls is consistent, depending on the poll, between, you know, 5 and 12%. It's been consistent longer than in any comparable presidential race. But first of all, even using conventional political math, it's still narrow enough that it could be overcome. Trump has a path to victory very much like 2016, which involves the Electoral College and prevailing there in key states, even when if he loses the popular vote. But secondly, it's all about turnout. We simply do not know who is going to vote and how people are going to vote and whether their votes are going to count if they are mailed in, because we don't know if the post office will deliver them on time. So there are, you know, wild uncertainties over the course of the next 70 days. Never mind the fact that as you get closer to elections, most of the time race is narrow. Most of the time people revert to their most conventional and familiar places. We don't know if that will happen this time. If it does, we can expect a tight race. If it doesn't, we can expect a more lopsided outcome. But there's, you know, there's so much we don't know. We have no basis for understanding voter behavior in a pandemic, voter behavior in the face of mail-in ballot uncertainty, and the sort of psychological voter suppression, which is what we really saw, among other things, on display last night, this constant rewriting of history, the counterfactual claims of the Trump campaign and speaker after speaker last night were designed not only to motivate the base, but to persuade everybody else that really, well, politicians are all the same and who knows what reality is, and I might as well just stay home. So, you know, we'll have to see. It's going to be an exciting ride.
Well, I was swayed by the first night of the Republican convention. How could one not be swayed and persuaded? There was that wonderful McCloskey couple, for example.
Well, this was
from St.
Louis
on their front porch waving their weapons.
This was of several sort of outlier speakers at the convention last night. The McCloskey couple were perhaps the strangest. You know, this was aimed at the NRA, the National Rifle Association faction of the Republican Party. The NRA itself is kind of on the ropes this year, being investigated by the New York Attorney General. Everybody, it seems the whole Republican Party is being investigated by some attorney general, but the McCloskeys are this couple of lawyers who brandish their guns and are facing criminal charges for threatening peaceful protesters at their homes. And they appeared to give their version of Donald Trump's apocalyptic rant about how Joe Biden will take away America's suburbs, will tear them down, and will, you know, introduce chaos. And
well, you're mocking this. I'm, as I say, totally persuaded, as I was by the African-American senator from South Carolina. I believe he's the only black Republican senator, but boy, did he make a powerful ice cream.
Well, look, Tim Scott, who was the closeout speaker, was... he is, first of all, he has a compelling first-person story, rather like Clarence Thomas's first-person story, Justice Clarence Thomas, the trials, the path and the trials of a self-motivated, self-made, conservative African-American. But really what Scott spoke to was that there were actually two different Republican conventions last night. There was the sort of McCloskey part of the convention and the Trump part of the convention, which was aimed at firing up the Trump base. And then there were a few speakers, Senator Scott, former governor and UN ambassador, also from South Carolina, Nikki Haley, a couple of others who were touting the party's diversity, not really to get black votes, but to persuade white voters that the party is actually not racist, to persuade themselves that they're not racist if they vote for Trump. But also, I think Scott and Haley in particular were really trying to stake out some ground for a post-Trump Republican Party. As we've said before, Republicans can read the tea leaves, the smart Republicans, and they know there's a very good chance that the president will go down in November. And if that happens, Nikki Haley and Tim Scott are trying to position themselves as people who can speak to the Trump base and yet tell a story about a more inclusive Republican Party. So that argument was kind of going on in the background. It was an interesting thing, along with many things that were not said last night.
I'm wondering, incidentally, as you know, Sarah Posner's coming on in just a moment, and I've not only now become a Republican, but I've become an evangelical. Was there a sales pitch to the likes of us?
Well, there was lots of God, and for the last week,
lots of God. Yes,
yeah,
good.
For the last week, the president has been promoting the completely false claim that the Democrats took the phrase "under God" out of the Pledge of Allegiance in last week's convention, and that there wasn't any God. There was there were priests and rabbis and imams every night of the Democratic convention, and the Pledge of Allegiance, this thing that every school child knows how to say, was recited over and over again with the phrase "under God" completely in it. But it being the Trump White House, fiction is not a problem, and that is a big part of the pitch to keep evangelicals in there, as were comments about abortion rights and other things. It is notable, though, that there were actually two phrases that went completely unstated. One was actually a number. Not one person all night, and I was checking, used the number 170,000. 170,000 are the number of Americans who have died from coronavirus. And while the convention last night was busy remaking Donald Trump's image as someone who had rescued the country from coronavirus using some very shady science, that death count was never spoken. Evangelicals, too, are losing their family members. And, you know, that we don't know the political impact. The other phrase that was scarcely mentioned was United States Postal Service. While the president himself in a sort of stand-up was shown with several essential workers, including a couple of postal workers, the U.S. Postal Service, as we've been talking about, has been taking a very big hit in recent weeks thanks to the president's Postmaster General cutting back. And rural America, including farmers, have been very hard hit because they depend on the Postal Service. There was a brilliant little piece of reporting in the New York Times last week involving the failure of the Postal Service in recent weeks to deliver baby chicks on time. It is the Postal Service that delivers chicks to farmers, and their farmers all over the country are opening up their packages to find a bunch of dead little birds or one or two little peeps in a box that's
This is a family program, Bruce. There's just so much pain that we can take, and I've got to wind you up in any case, but I'm looking forward to Steve Bannon's speech
I do have to tell you that Mr. Bannon was arrested just up the road from my home in New Haven.
Really?
What a wonderful spectacle. On the eve of Joe Biden's speech, the irony of having President Trump's top campaign strategist arrested was kind of the peak of this entire two-convention experience.
You will not talk me out of my new passion for the Donald, and nor will Sarah Posner, who's about to join us. Bruce, thank you for that. That's Bruce Shapiro, and of course Bruce is the Exec Director of the Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia, LNL on Radio National.